in Montreal.
For CGLO News, I'm Zach Jutra. Participants of Montreal's Icebox Challenge dismantled their displays at the Old Port Tuesday night as the competition comes to an end. Teams from Concordia and ETS created structures to keep a massive block of ice intact for 20 days. A third structure was set up by Bâtiment Passif Québec using the standard Quebec building code. Jules Rochette from Bâtiment Passif says the challenge shows that Quebec can change its code.
It's not a crazy idea to build better than what we do, because they've done it. They're students. They figured it out. Yes, there's a scientific method to it. Yes, there's learning curve for all the construction, the people involved in the construction industry. But the fact that we have no ice left is embarrassing.
Sébastien Jacquet, a professor at ETS, helped organize the challenge. Jacquet says the challenge showed the importance of proper insulation year-round.
In terms of what we get to know from this challenge is just that more insulation is good for winter, but it's also good for summer. And as the climate change starts to grow bigger, prevents your home from the heat is also important.
Ana Victoria Palma Florido is the deputy team lead of Concordia's team, and she says the experience showed how her degree could be put into practice.
I think it's a great opportunity to explore, to put your degree into practice, you know, like what have I learned in my undergrad that like can be executed in real life. So that was another aspect of it. But truly it was just like, okay, let's meet cool people. Let's see where this goes.
Three judges will decide the winner of the competition Thursday evening. Judges will grade the teams on more than just how much ice is left. Their designs and future plans for the structures will be judged as well. Bâtiment Passif's structure will be donated as a chicken coop. Concordia's will be used as a cooling structure for produce at Concordia's community garden. And ETS will donate theirs to a research center to house the center's technology. For more, go to cglo.com/news or follow CGLO News on Spotify.
Trying to be a friend. You gotta look through all your eyes if you wanna see around the bend.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1619 AM. I'm your host, Judy, and we have Mimi Mariam with us.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to our show. I'm feeling very calm today and excited to be here. We have a lot of topics and a lot of people that we will be presenting to you all, so I'm excited for that. But let's talk about ourselves a little bit. So
let's expose ourselves.
I think we should, you know, include ourselves before we include anyone else. No, I'm kidding. So I'm gonna talk about myself a little bit. I'm Mariam here. I'm the co-host of the show, and we've been doing this show for a while now, and I'm really happy to be here again. We try to be here every week, and every time we are here, we try our best to present you all our knowledge of Arab and Middle Eastern culture. So through music, through our knowledge on food, on our countries, where we're from, and where our parents are from. So. Hopefully we're doing that correctly and we haven't really said any mistakes. I'm just like,
hopefully.
I'm kind of like nervous. Like I gotta like fact check everything I do, and I'm trying my best to like say valid stuff about our region and say the truth and say like the beautiful stuff, beautiful things and beautiful stories that we hear about our countries to everyone here in Montreal and anyone who's listening to us. So yeah, that's me. What about you, Judy? What do you want to say?
Okay, hello everyone, I'm your co-host Judy, and as Mimi like said, she already like explained almost everything that we're doing, and yeah. I hope so too that we're actually saying the right stuff and we're not mistaking, like doing any mistakes. Yeah. And if we are, please let us know. Like, we're happy to hear any feedback on our show, and like if we're doing it correctly. If you want to talk about a specific topic, you can tell us. It will be an honor for us to have more people coming here because we're representing the people. So we want you guys to come and like tell us what you want. We're here for the voice, to be your voice.
To be the voice
of the voiceless.
Exactly. So. That's the name of our show. And again, I'm not an expert on like the Middle East, and like, you know, I'm not like an expert in the Middle East. Sounds very weird. That's like very like as if I'm teaching about the region. But no, like we come from those places. But we don't study it. Like we don't actually like
it's based on experience or knowledge that our parents have taught us, and like the things that we've seen online or throughout our lives through the people surrounding us. I think that's
the best way you can explain it.
That's how we get it. So sometimes like we might do mistakes, you know, even if we come from these regions, we might make mistakes.
Exactly,
we never know if we're saying some right things or wrong things.
We try to source our the information we get, so I think that's a good way to, you know, fact check our what we say by like making sure that those source that we're using is valid and is reliable. So
but also sometimes we talk about like different things, not also about like people. We also talk about our experiences, which is so nice because this way we don't really source them. We actually are the source.
We are.
You know, we become the source.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
No need to source anything sometimes.
Yeah.
So when that happens, it's actually fun, but it's also. We expose in a way like our
it's like a expose session.
it's like a therapy session, but I really like it. I enjoy it. Like it's so nice to talk about these things and just like having this platform to share our thoughts and ideas on these type of topics.
I feel happy when we talk about our experiences. Like I like sharing, you know, happy moments I have and stories that I want to tell to you and to everyone listening. But sometimes it gets too much, and we try our best to keep it quick and keep it simple for you to understand and for you to follow, and hopefully you are enjoying it. So.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah, I'm excited. For today's episode.
Me too. So for today's episode, we will be presenting a few Arab artists and writers. They're specifically known for their writings, but they have also performed on stage, and they have actively participated in issues regarding the Middle East and things like that. So mm-hmm. we would call them artists in general, but yeah. I think they're mostly known writers. For their writings. Mm-hmm. So I can start with my first mm-hmm. one.
Yeah, you can start. Go ahead.
Okay. So I have. So we are presenting today. The first one will be Ghassan Kanifani. He is remembered as one of the Palestine's most influential intellectuals, and he was born in Palestine. And in English, it's Acre, I believe, in 1936. And his first years of studies were in a French Catholic school, actually, in Jaffa. So now it's a city occupied by the Zionist forces. In 1948, at the age of 12, he and his family were forced to leave their home after the Zionist capture of Palestine. So he went and sought refuge in London and then in Syria, in Damascus. So in Damascus, he worked at a printing press. And at night, he would teach art at the UN refugee school in the 50s. And at that time, as a teenager, he became more politically aware of the struggles under Zionist occupation. So in the early 60s, he founded the Popular Front of Liberation of Palestine. It's a revolutionary organization whose military wing targeted Israeli interests and guerrilla operations. And he served as the group's spokesman and editor of its weekly magazine. And after graduating in Arabic literature at University of Damascus, he published his first story, A New Sun. And in the following years, Ghassan Kanifani produced some of Arab's world's most celebrated works of fiction, including Men in the Sun, a story that follows Palestinian laborers looking for work in the Gulf and explores themes of sexuality, masculinity, and rootlessness. So right now I will be reading a excerpt from Men in the Sun, which is a short story written by Ghassan Kanifani. I was sure that the God we had known in Palestine had left it too, and was a refugee in some place which I did not know, unable to find a solution to his own problems. And we, human refugees, sitting on the pavement waiting for a new fate to bring some solution, were responsible for providing a roof under which we spend the night. I will be also reading a excerpt from Returning to Haifa. And this novel or short story written by Ghassan Kanifani takes place in 1967, when Palestinian refugees living in the newly occupied territories had an opportunity to visit the places from which they had been expelled in 1948. This is an excerpt from Returning to Haifa. What's Palestine with respect to Khalid? He doesn't know the vase or the picture or the stairs or Halisa or Khaldun. And yet for him, Palestine is something worthy of a man bearing arms for, dying for. For us, for you and me, it's only a search for something buried beneath the dust of memories. And look what we found beneath the dust, yet more dust. We were mistaken when we thought the homeland was only the past. For Khalid, the homeland is the future. So there are very few Palestinian novelists, or actually any writers of any nationality, who speaks of the harsh existence and displacement as powerfully as Ghassan Kanifani. He is a writer who shaped the struggle of statelessness in sublime words, masterfully woven together into timeless novels such as Men in the Sun and Return to Haifa. He is known to use the most beautiful Arabic expressions, capturing the complexities and intricacies of the Arabic language, making him one of the most captivating writers of his time. And in terms of his involvement and advocating for a free Palestine, he did not take part in any attack towards Zionist forces, but kept a firm stance against occupation, saying the idea of negotiations was impossible. Mm-hmm. As he said, that is the idea of that is the idea of conversation between the sword and the neck. So I will be playing a video of him in an interview in Beirut in 1970, and he will be and he was talking about the struggle Palestine faced during that time.
It's a liberation movement fighting for justice.
Well, whatever it might be best called.
It's not whatever, because this is where the problems start. This is a people who is discriminated, is fighting for his rights. This is a story.
Why won't your organization engage in peace talks with the Israelis?
You don't mean exactly peace talks. You mean capitulation, surrendering.
Why not just talk?
Talk to whom?
Talk to the Israeli leaders.
That's kind of conversation between the sword and the neck, you mean?
Well, if there are no swords and no guns in the room, you could still talk.
No, I had never seen any talk between a colonialist case and a national liberation movement.
But despite this, why not talk?
Talk about what?
Talk about the possibility of not fighting.
Not fighting for what?
Not fighting at all, no matter what for.
Yeah, and people usually fight for something and they stop fighting for something. So you can't tell me even why should we speak about what?
Well, stop fighting.
Fight for what or talk about stop fighting, why?
Talk to stop fighting to stop the death and the misery, the destruction, the pain.
The misery and the destruction and the pain and the death of whom?
Of Palestinians, of Israelis, of Arabs.
Of the Palestinian people who are uprooted, thrown in the camps, living in starvation, killed for 20 years, and forbidden to use even the name Palestinians.
They're better that way than dead, though.
Maybe to you, but to us, it's not. To us, to liberate our country, to have dignity, to have respect, to have our mere human rights is something as essential as life itself.
So you were listening to Ghassan Kanafani and his interview. Sorry about that. The interview finished very quickly, so I came back very quickly. So that was an interview he did before he was brutally killed by Israeli intelligence, so the Mossad. In Israel, he is remembered as a terrorist, but in Palestine, he is celebrated for his literacy and his tender portrayal of their struggle. And his stories laid the groundwork for other Palestinian authors who helped develop the concept of resistance literature. During his obituary in Lebanon, the Daily Star newspaper called Kanafani a commando who never fired a gun, whose weapon was a ballpoint pen, and his arena a newspaper pages. So all this knowledge and all this facts that I have said to you was by the MiddleEastEye.net website. So for me, that's it for Ghassan Kanafani. Judy, you thought it was a bit too long?
Yeah. I didn't expect her to talk that much because I thought it was like, I prepped something, but it was shorter.
It's okay.
But you know, yeah. It's actually, I never knew that he lived in Syria, by the way.
Really?
I knew about him, but not that much, that many information. So to hear his story is actually very inspiring, to be honest, because he traveled and like he went and talked about the cause and like he was able to express his thoughts even in the interview. They were asking him like and the way he was like fighting back with the words he was saying, you know, that was like really interesting, like a very good way to talk back to the interviewer that was interviewing him. Because he was like, oh, like, have you ever thought about not fighting? He was like, fighting for what? But the guy never said never said the word or never said anything. He just tried to go around and then ask him the same question again.
Right.
It was like,
yeah. No, I agree with you. I really like I found it very very powerful the way that he fights for the struggle through words. Like, he doesn't, you know, arm himself, he wasn't really involved in the guerrilla operations, yet he was still killed by the Israeli forces. So even if you try to, you know, speak about it and you write it on newspapers and you talked about it to other people, you may be a victim. So that's very, very, very sad and very, very devastating to hear. So basically, a weapon can be a pen. So pen is a weapon, and that's what he is known for, and that's what why people adore him, and his talent and his writing and his style and his ideas and things like that are very. Are very applauded by the Arab world. So,
he's a very well known man.
Yeah,
and may God bless his soul.
Yeah,
and yeah,
yeah. So, do you want to go next, or should we play some ads?
Just play an ad. And
okay. Okay.
Song, and then we can come back.
Perfect.
Okay, enjoy, guys.
Did you hear that? It's the sound of the Fantasia International Film Festival, back for another year on the downtown campus of Concordia University from July 16th to August 3rd. North America's premier genre film festival is your place to see the most eye-poppingly, face-meltingly extraordinary films from around the world. For more information on movies, tickets, and showtimes, check out FantasiaFestival.com. And be sure to listen to CJLO and check out CJLO.com for your chance to win tickets. This is all brought to you by CJLO 1690 AM and the fine folks at
Fantasia.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
Yahoo! You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
Well, then tune in to At the Movies every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM with your hosts,
Remy
and Danny.
May the force be with you. Goodbye, old friend. May the force be with you.
Thank you.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 6090 AM. You are listening to Foreign Land by Mira Muti. Hopefully I'm presenting. Mm-hmm. I am pronouncing that correctly. Mira Muti is a Palestinian artist living in Montreal. And she is actually studying at McGill. She's a very local artist, and I'm happy. We're happy to play her music here today, and we are planning to even invite her in the show. Hopefully, by beginning of September, and you will be able to hear her music again, and what she has to say about her music and where she's from and what she does. So I'm very excited for that.
Me too. Exciting.
So exciting.
Bringing more people in and like doing interviews. And her song is so beautiful. So thank you for that. I'm gonna take on from here. I'm gonna present my. Person, I'm gonna be talking about Nizar Abani. He's a Syrian poet and diplomat, born in 1923. He was born in Syria, Damascus, and He studied law at University of Damascus, and he began his career as a diplomat. So he wasn't a poet, nothing. Like, he didn't write anything. He was just going. He lived in Egypt for a while, Turkey, Lebanon, Britain, and China and Spain before retiring and moving back to Syria, which was to Beirut actually, in 1966. And this is where he founded Manshurat Nizar Abani, which is a publishing company. And he wrote poetry at that time. And his poetic language is it's more about it represents the Arab identity, the woman, and as well as the the love for his city and the love for his countries. And he often challenged traditional norms and challenged ideologies that people have, and which made him a very big known artist and in the Arab world. One of the poems that I'm gonna be playing is called "This Is Damascus." Hadi Dimashq. It's a love letter to his hometown, which evokes pride, nostalgia, and emotional attachments. His legacy. This poem reflects a lot about his love through this country, to this country. And I'm gonna be playing a bit of it right now. So.
هذه دمشق وهذه الكأس والراح إني أحب وبعض الحب ذباح أنا الدمشقي لو شرحتم جسدي لسال منه عناقيد وتفاح أنا الدمشقي لو شرحتم جسدي لسال منه عناقيد وتفاح ولو فتحتم شراييني بمديتكم سمعتم في دمي أصوات من راحوا زراعة القلب أنا الدمشقي لو شرحتم جسدي لسال منه عناقيد وتفاح ولو فتحتم شراييني بمديتكم سمعتم في دمي أصوات من راحوا زراعة القلب تشفي بعض من عشقوا وما لقلبي إذا أحبب جراح ألا تزال بخير دار فاطمة ألا تزال بخير دار فاطمة فالمهد مستنفر والكحل صباح إن النبيذ هنا نار معطرة فهل عيون نساء الشام أقداح. ألا تزال بخير دار فاطمة فالنهد مستنفر.
Hello everyone, you were just listening to the excerpt of This is Damascus by Nizar Abani. And this, I'm gonna explaining it in English because it's it was an Arabic poem. So basically he was saying that this is Damascus, it's the city where this is Damascus, it's the city of of love. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the exact word because I didn't memorize it, but
what was the word?
I forgot the word. He says إني أحب هذه المشق وهذه الكأس والراحة. So it's very hard to actually explain it in English.
Yeah, raha is
is a comfort.
Yeah.
So this is the cup and of uncomfort. It doesn't make sense.
Of uncomfort?
Uncomfort.
Of discomfort.
Comfort. No, comfortable.
Oh, of comfort. Yeah, of you comfort. Can say that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The cup of comfort.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just like explaining his love to this city and how like he, because at this point he was not in Syria and he was just explaining about how nostalgic he feels towards the city. And he's asking like, is it the same as I left it? Are the people the same? Are the people, are they still living the same way? Is it safe over there? How is it? He was like, I love it, like I love Syria to the point it's a different type of love. Mm-hmm. In my heart, it's not like, it's like a sickness, you know. That's how hard he mm-hmm. explained it. He was like, even if you like open my veins and see yeah. inside my body, you'll see Damascus in a way. That's how he's like explaining it. And he's like talking about like you'll hear the people who left the city and like who left the city. I tried to look at the time that this poem was
written,
mm-hmm. but I couldn't find the time. I don't know why. I was trying to find it, but I wasn't able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, wait. Let me just give. No, it doesn't. Yeah, actually, yeah, it does say. No, it doesn't say. But it just says, no, that this is the time where he wasn't in Syria.
Okay.
When he was not living in this Damascus
house. So he was
house.
Reminiscing on he his, was reminiscing on his time. Experience in Damascus. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Wow. And yeah, he was just like, yeah, the love that he found over there, which I think is amazing because it's very hard for a person to get connected to a country. And when you feel that, it makes you... I don't know. I've never felt personally connected to any country. I feel like I'm from all over.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to like feel this way towards someone or towards a country, it's amazing. And mm-hmm. just the fact that he's fighting for it in a way through words or through explaining his love to it.
Yeah.
sorry. Another thing that I wanted to mention. Also, he... Nizar also writes his poem about for women because his sister was forced to get married to someone, and unfortunately she committed suicide because she was unwillingly like she didn't want to marry the man. So he got really influenced after that, and he started writing poems about reflecting this fact, this matter of like forcing women to do stuff that they don't want to do and that they have the freedom to choose whatever they want. Mm-hmm. It's their choice, they can do whatever they want. And yeah, that yeah. was a very turning point in yeah. his art.
No, that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he touches upon several topics. Mm-hmm. About countries he's visited, Damascus, where he really felt attached to, and speaks of it as if it's his like lover, like it's like mm-hmm. really like he's like a kind of obsessed.
Yeah, he's in love. Yeah, even
to the city. So mm-hmm. no, that's really beautiful. Like mm-hmm. the words he uses,
Yeah, and I've also I've read once that he also talked, because I've seen his interviews, and I've seen that he also talked about the previous like a previous regime that we used to have in Syria, the Bashar al-Assad's and Hafez al-Assad's regime, and he also talked about, like, he was actually against them, but he wasn't, like, saying it directly. It was kind of indirectly through his speaking. That's why I think part of it, maybe he actually didn't stay in Syria. I'm not really sure. Maybe that's why he actually left and didn't come back. Because if you love a city so much, why don't you come back, especially at that time? So I think one of the reasons could be because he was wanted. He was the previous government wanted him, and if they had him, they would have killed him, and he would have been able to have a voice.
Right. Yeah.
He died out of a heart attack in actually London when he was in 1998. So.
Yeah. You know, he was a pioneer of the Arab literature. Like, everyone who knows a little bit about Arabic literature would know him. I think he's like the first introduction to Arabic literature. So he's very talented, and I'm happy that you shared him with us today. So yeah, so we can move on to the next. Should I continue on?
Yeah, okay. You can go.
Okay, so I will be now presenting the third out of the four writers that we will be speaking about today. So I will be presenting someone else from, not from the Syrian, Lebanon, Palestine region. I'm going a bit far away and a bit on the, up North on the, yeah, exactly, on the edge of the Middle East, I would say. So Algeria. So this author called Yasmina Khadra is a Algerian writer. And he is one of the most important voices, actually, of the contemporary French literature. And I will explain why. His three most popular novels, The Sirens of Baghdad, The Attack, and The Swallows of Kabul, shed light on the conflict between the East and the West by uncovering human experiences in the military and politically unstable regions. He was a former military office, and he became a military office after Algeria's independence from the French colonial state, and he stayed a military office during the civil war in Algeria, and he became an internationally renowned art author, winning awards such as Association des Librairies Algériens, the Prix du meilleur polar francophone, Prix littéraire Beurre FM Méditerranée, and Prix Tropique. And now he lives in Aix-en-Provence, so in the south of France. I will be playing a quick 5-minute interview of him, speaking about what he does and his history. This interview is in French, so I apologize if anyone doesn't speak French, but he is really famous, and he is known for his literature in French that has been translated in multiple languages. So his, I would say his second language is French, and he'll be speaking in this video in his interview. So this is Yasmina Khadra, Algérien Universel.
Je m'appelle Mohamed Moursoul. Je suis né dans le Sahara algérien, plus précisément à Qnetsa, du côté de Béchar, même si sur mon extrait de naissance c'est écrit Béchar, mais c'est une vieille histoire. À un certain moment, sous l'autorité du président Boumediene, ils ont voulu un petit peu dispatcher les tribus. Donc ils ont pratiquement éliminé notre origine tribale pour nous intégrer un peu dans un monde plus large. Et c'est comme ça que je me suis retrouvé avec un extrait de naissance né à Béchar. D'accord. J'ai grandi dans une famille assez patriote quand même. Mon père était officier de l'ALN. Oui. Il avait rejoint l'armée de libération nationale en 1956. Il a été blessé en 1958 et est devenu aspirant à l'époque, officier. Et ma mère, c'était aussi une militante du FLN. Alors, et puis, à un certain moment, ma mère a été menacée. Et on a été obligé de quitter Béchar pour nous installer à Oran, plus précisément aussi là, à Victor Hugo. on appelle aussi Thierry Hugo. Et en 1964, deux ans après l'indépendance de l'Algérie, mon père m'a mis, m'a confié à une école militaire,
oui.
L'école des cadets de Tlemcen, El Mechouar.
Et vous aviez 9 ans.
J'ai passé toute ma vie dans cet univers soldatesque. Donc, j'ai passé 36 ans de ma vie dans l'armée. Mais j'ai commencé à écrire très, très jeune. D'abord, tout ce qui rimait avait pour moi, tout ce qui avait une musicalité et rimait, c'était la poésie.
D'accord.
Je pouvais dire n'importe quelle sottise, mais c'est là l'excuse de rimer et de raisonner comme un son musical, ben ça devenait poésie. Donc j'étais un petit peu le parolier de ma fratrie. J'écrivais des chansonnettes pour mes sœurs et mes frères et sœurs. Et c'est à partir de 11 ans que j'ai écrit ma toute première nouvelle, qui m'a valu une récompense. Et c'était à l'école des cadets. Et je me suis éveillé à cette vocation d'écrire très, très jeune. Je savais que j'étais venu au monde pour écrire. Mmh. Et j'ai terminé mon premier recueil de nouvelles à l'âge de 17 ans, Huria, qui est sorti aux éditions Eunal, Entreprise Nationale du Livre. Même en Algérie, c'est bizarre, il n'y a même pas de romantisme dans la littérature. Entreprise Nationale du Livre, c'est horrible. Donc, j'ai continué d'écrire sous mon vrai nom jusqu'en 1988, où j'avais choisi le pseudonyme parce que deux ans auparavant, l'armée avait créé un comité de censure. Et je ne pouvais pas accepter ce comité, donc il me fallait choisir un pseudonyme, ça a été le commissaire Loeb. J'ai commencé à écrire sous le pseudonyme du commissaire Loeb, le Dingo Bistouri,
oui.
Mon tout premier roman policier, et La foire aux enfoirés, qui est certainement le livre le plus médiocre que la littérature algérienne ait connu. mais si, je n'exagère pas. Et par la suite, il y a eu la guerre intérieure, la guerre intérieure, la décennie noire.
Que vous
et
avez
comme j'étais officier supérieur et même un acteur assez important dans cette lutte, j'ai été contraint de choisir d'autres pseudonymes pour raconter un petit peu la tragédie algérienne. Et ça a été les prénoms de mon épouse, Yamina Khadra. Mais mon éditeur n'a pas compris que Yamina
oui, la petite était histoire, un prénom. C'est qu'il pensait corriger une faute.
Il a corrigé, oui. Ouais. Voilà, on le corrige toujours. C'est-à-dire, même, ils se disent que ces Algériens ne savent même pas écrire leur nom. Donc, il a ajouté un S et la légende a commencé à partir de là.
J'aimerais vraiment, pour les auditeurs et surtout la jeune génération, qu'on revienne sur vos débuts. Alors, vous les avez bien évoqués, mais sur la partie, justement, engagement dans l'armée algérienne qui a duré 36 ans. Si,
oui,
ouais. Donc,
oui mais c'était une époque...
Hello, hello, welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 6090 AM. You were listening to a interview of Yasmina Khadra, a recent interview actually, so 3 months ago. He was explaining about his history and his childhood, mm-hmm. and where he lived and where he worked at. So, fun fact, actually, that's not his real name. His name is, let me just quickly put that up here. His real name is actually Muhammad Mulhissu, I think. The reason as to why he changed his name to Yasmina Khadra was because he wanted to hide his real name from the Islamists that were controlling our country during the civil war. There was basically mm-hmm. a fight against two parties that created a civil war in Algeria. So he was scared that he will be like he will get in trouble basically by whoever was controlling the country at that time. So he changed his name and he used one name was the first name. Yasmina was his first was the first name of his wife, and the second name was the second name of his wife. So Yasmina Khadra was basically
his wife's
name.
Oh, How is that possible, though?
Because he didn't...
Is it okay to write his wife's name?
Well, he didn't want to use his real name on the books.
Out of everyone...
He just chose his wife's name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I guess maybe she was more low-key.
That's so interesting, because I remember I told you, like, it's an interesting name, because I thought the name was... Like, he was a girl when he first told me about him.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't know, actually, this fact. I didn't know, like, why his name sounded like a female name.
Because, it sounds like a female name. Like, Yasmin, Yasmina, usually is a female name.
So
that's a very interesting fact, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. He basically just wanted to hide his name and be anonymous in his literature. So he after the publication of his first two books, featuring the incorruptible, increasingly helpless police detective. So his first novels were basically, I don't know how you call this in English, but they were des romans policiers. So they're like, they're very...
crime fiction.
So involving the police, and there's like investigations, and there's someone who gets arrested, and they want to find out who did it and who was part of the crime.
Is it based on real stories or
I don't think it was based on real stories, but he was very influenced by what was happening in his country during that time. So I guess he, wrote not necessarily facts, but imagine the world based on what was happening in his country. So that was his first few books, more about like crime fiction and about police intervention and things like that. So in his books he uncovered the grievances of Algerian society, including corruption and cliquism. And by doing so, he gets between the front line of the Islamists, so people who were trying to reign the country at that time, and the established power elite, so the other opposition at that time. The author could only get published abroad and adopted his wife's two first names as a pseudonym. So that was what I was saying before.
What?
A pseudonym.
So what does pseudonym
mean? It's like a pseudonym. So like a name that's not basically his. So he.
But wouldn't they if like he's trying to hide his identity towards them, but they would know his wife. So it's kind of like.
Well, he didn't use the last name of his wife.
Oh.
He used the first and second name of his wife, so the first name and the middle name.
Oh, okay, middle name. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I wasn't clear on that. Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought it was like her last name first name. So I was like, okay, if that's the case, then they would know.
They would
his
find
wife.
Her. Yeah, yeah. No, okay, it was her first and second name. So first and middle name. And then he sought exile outside of Algeria because he was basically against the thoughts of the Islamist regime, extremists of the country. He's now living in France, and he is a very international known.
Does he still write books until now or not?
I'm not sure if he wrote a book recently, but I think he did like a few years ago, like between 2020 and now. He published. Yeah, he's still active, and he won recently a few awards, and What I like about him is that he really tries to speak to people who don't know much about us, and tries to portray an image of us that is different from what they believe it is. So he really tries to imagine, but create stories based on a different perspective than maybe the West or America or Canada has on regions such as Algeria, or regions that suffered through war, like in Afghanistan and places like that. So he really tries to portray these countries in a different lens than other countries may portray these countries as.
So he doesn't just specify on one country.
He goes deep in like the lives of people in the region as a whole, like not only the Arab region, but like countries around Afghanistan and Baghdad, Iraq. He made a novel based on the Iraqi war and things like that. So, yeah, no, very interesting. And he also did The Attack, the novel called The Attack by Yasemin Khadra. Mentions the story of a man in Palestine, in occupied Palestine, and things like that. So he really touches upon many struggles we mm-hmm. face as people who live in that region. Very interesting person.
Yeah, very interesting. I've never heard of him before, like hearing... That's what I like about this, because like the more we do research, the more we found out about people, and the more you're like, okay, there's a lot of people who are actually trying so hard to shed a light on the Arab world, or like just in general, like showing, as you said, showing a different side of what we want to show, not the side that the West shows.
Yeah, or maybe a lot of people think of, and we want to show a different lens, and he does that through mm-hmm. writing, and he's very famous in France, and he has very like specific views on certain things, yet he is also like very active in French culture and media and things like that, and mm-hmm. he really tries his best to portray Arabs and Muslims and people like that as people who have a mind, and people who reflect and who are humans and who really
intellectuals
mm-hmm. and people who they're just basically human suffering and mm-hmm. and really humanizes like us rather mm-hmm. than dehumanizing Arabs and Muslims in general. So yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. Love that. We can continue with my person, but mm-hmm. I think we can just go on a break one last advertisement, and then we'll come back and I'll talk about Mahmoud Darwish, a Palestinian author, and yeah, that's it. Enjoy.
Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Im cabaret, au cabaret, tout cabaret.
The Comfy Cabaret is now open every Tuesday at 6. Forget all your fears, problems, struggles, and snuggle up. Relax, I've got all that's going on with local, new, underappreciated artists in a chilled out indie pop landscape. We feature artists every week talking about their stories and music, plus new releases you're sure to love as well. You can find your new favorite artist before the world does right here on the Comfy Cabaret.
Welcome back, everyone, on to the voice. You're listening to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1690 AM. We're gonna wrap up our topic for the day with the last author, the poet and author and activist that we have. And yeah, that's it. We hope you guys enjoyed. And the guy, his name is Mahmoud Darwish. He's born in 1941 in Al Birwe in Palestine. And he's a poem/activist that talks a lot about the Palestinian cause. And in 1948 his village was destroyed and his family fled to Lebanon. However they returned the following year secretly, re-entering their homeland, so without anyone noticing. Mm-hmm. And as a young man, as he was growing up, he has faced house arrest and imprisonment for his political activism and for publicly reading his poetry, because it was against the Israeli occupation. And he also joined the Raqqa political party in the 1960s. In 1970, he left for Russia, to Moscow, and he attended the university for 1 year, and then he moved to Cairo, and afterwards, he just lived outside of Palestine for almost 26 years, and he was in between Paris, Beirut, until 1996. he then moved to Ramallah in the West Bank. He's considered one of the most how do I explain this? It's like, wait, I need to find the word. Sorry. How do I say it?
Like, what do you want to say? Like, what do you mean?
Wait. Outspoken.
Outspoken. Okay.
He's a very outspoken person and always talks about like important things that are related to Palestine. He was also part of the. He was also an editor for a Palestinian liberation organization, and the director of the group's research center. In 1987, he was appointed to the PLO executive committee and resigned in 1993. And also, I wanted to talk about his poem that I found very interesting. It's called Ritta wal-Buntuqiyya. Basically, this poem talks about his love that he found in Palestine. Her name is Rita, and she's an Israeli. And like it was called the forbidden love. He was just talking about like expressing his emotions and like how it wasn't gonna work because of the whole differences that they had. And basically, Rita wal-Buntuqiyya means Rita and the rifle. So like there's weapons in between them. That's why it's hard for them to get together.
Perfect. Yeah, so we will be playing probably a minute of this video and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
بين رتا وعيوني بندقية والذي يعرف رتا ينحني ويصلي لإله في العيون العسلية وأنا قبلت رتا عندما كانت صغيرة وأنا أذكر كيف التصقت بي وغطت ساعدي أحلى ضفيرة وأنا أذكر رتا مثلما يذكر عصفور غديرة آه رتا بيننا مليون عصفور وصورة ومواعيد كثيرة أطلقت نارا علي.
Hello, hello, welcome back on the Voice of the Voiceless. Yeah, we wish we could have continued the poem, but maybe next time we will play it at the beginning of the show. So you are listening to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 6090 AM. I was your host, Miriam, and I was with Judy, my co-host. Thank you for listening, and make sure to stay tuned for next week, as we have a special guest with us too. So have a nice week and enjoy your week. Bye-bye. Bye.